You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, David Sanagarcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Now, today's episode is a bit different. That's due to technical difficulties completely on our end, which forced us to resume the episode the next day. That's why you might see a bit of different clothing and location in the video. Today, I chatted with Anna Maikis. She is the CEO and co-founder of Neuroelectrics. Neuroelectrics was founded in 2011 in Spain and develops technology for brain monitoring, specifically with applications to Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and even things like brain fatigue. Anna chatted with me about the applications the technology has seen through NASA, through remote monitoring, as well as what it's like to expand a company outside of Europe into the US and even Shanghai. This applies also to conversations about technology autonomy when it comes to European companies, how it measures when expanding abroad, and even her involvement in initiatives like EzTech, which look to improve the conditions for startups in Spain. This forms part also with Global and Cabify household names. So I hope you're looking forward to that. But before, a quick message from our sponsor, Vent.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hello, Anna, and welcome to EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. We know you're busy, so we're going to try to keep it short, quick, and interesting. I was hoping that before we get started, you just give us a quick rundown of who you are, what you do, and what your company innovates on.
So Neuroelectrics, I'm the CEO and founders, and Neuroelectrics is a wonderful company because we are working on one of the most kind of cutting-edge deep tech areas, which is neurotechnology. We have developed a technology to monitor and stimulate the brain, and this is going to have tremendous applications on the healthcare industry. But I think it's also, we can discuss a lot about, you know, the future of neurotech and scaling a company, you know, from Barcelona to Boston, you know, European to the US, which is a very hot topic right now as well.
Yes, it is. I think most people that I have on the podcast in one way or another kind of end up talking about that topic. Before we get into it, though, I think it's interesting to begin. I think so. You're founded in 2011 as a spinoff from a Star Lab, if mm-hmm. I'm correct. Now, I'm kind of curious at the beginning. So when we go back to the very beginning of the company, what is it that you were looking to address? Because from what I've read, the technology has such a wide application. You know, I've read that it could be used in Alzheimer's research, epilepsy, Parkinson's. So I'm curious if at the beginning there was something specific that you were going for.
At the beginning, no. If I have to be honest, we were more of a deep tech technology push company. We were very excited about neuroscience. We were very obsessed about decoding the brain, understanding the brain. So it was more of a scientific kind of approach to the company. And we spent like 10 years, you know, with a lot of European funding, really trying to understand how the brain works from an electrical perspective. And then I think that through years of very, you know, deep research and developing the first prototypes, we started to think, okay, now we have the basis of the science. We have a first kind of prototype and the technology. Now, you know, what are the pathologies and places where we can help. And epilepsy was our first indication. So it's not a case of a startup that was founded because of a need in the market, but more of an internal challenge to really develop science and technology related to the brain.
I mean, it seems to be a bet that's pulled off, because now we're talking 15 years later after the fact, and you've clearly survived and thrived. And that makes me think about how you see the neurotechnology field now versus what it looked like in 2011, especially if we're talking about Spain.
Well, I think that it's very interesting, because back on the days, I mean, Neuresis is our second company, my co-founder and me, but in year 2000 in the startup, we were already doing neuroscience research. So it's been like almost 25 years of neuroscience research. And I have to say that, you know, since of course Elon Musk came into the scene with Neuralink, you know, drawing the spotlight into the field, I've seen a lot of progress, in the sense that there are now a lot of startup companies and not so small companies working on brain computer interfaces, from implanted devices, right, to do brain computer interfaces like Neuralink, but Synchron, Paradromics, Precision, right, to other, you know, startups that are really developing therapies for the brain. For example, our colleagues at Cognito using flickering lights for Alzheimer's, us using electrical stimulation, ultrasound companies. So I think that it's become more mainstream in a way and more real. And even as a fun fact, Dan Brown's book on the secrets now, it's all about, you know, neurotech, you know, consciousness. So I think it has become a very hot topic, but we've been working on it for the last 25 years.
Dan Brown. Wow, I haven't thought about Dan Brown in years, actually. Yeah,
he has a new book. I love his new book. I highly recommend it. It even describes an epileptic seizure. It describes brain-computer interfaces. And it talks a lot about consciousness, which I think is a really interesting topic.
I love the Da Vinci Code. That was one of my favorite books growing up. So yeah, I'll have to jump in on that. So then you're talking here about the different implementations other companies are doing, the way you fit in. So maybe for listeners who aren't just that well informed, and I include myself in that category, I was hoping you could kind of explain to us what is the, how does non-invasive brain stimulation work? And on top of that, what is the difference in, say, invasive procedures? You know, how does that compare?
Yeah, and I don't have it one with me right now because I just left it in another room. But, you know, you can see online, but this is our famous cap. So I think the beauty of this cap is that it's just like a neoprene cap with a small amplifier on the back of your head with a Velcro, which means you're totally portable and you can be, you know, no cables. And these electrodes that you can see in this picture, right? These electrodes are collecting the electrical activity in your brain, and it helps two purposes. On one side, we can collect information, electrical information from your brain, called electroencephalography or EEG, which is very similar to your heart. When you're doing an EKG, they're collecting the electrical signals in your heart. So the brain also creates this network of electrical connections, which you can keep up with these electrodes, which of course are in a cap and you don't need to open any scalp. But the beauty is that any of these electrodes can also inject currents into the brain. And this electrical stimulation or small electroshocks through the scalp, we firmly believe that can help, you know, be a therapy for diseases. For example, in the case of epilepsy, with our cap, we can see with an electrode that you have an epileptic seizure because your brain activity is off the charts, right? Your neurons are firing, let's say, more. So what we do is we inject negative electrical currents into the brain to bring down the excitability of the neurons. And let's say we try to make them fire less, so we prevent these seizures from happening. So what is really interesting is that we are now about to read out our pivotal phase 3 clinical trial, which means that we've been spending the last 4 years and $25 million in doing a US and European clinical trial on the use of electrical stimulation on epilepsy. And after 10 days of 20 minutes of stimulation, we demonstrated that we can reduce seizures 50%. So patients that don't respond to medication, they get this stimulation and we are reducing their seizures. So If the readout in May is good, we will have developed a new non-invasive therapy for epilepsy that today doesn't exist. So I think that's what being, you know, IEU startup, or that's why being an entrepreneur is really beautiful, right? Because you're bringing to the world, you know, solutions or technology that can do a lot of good and that didn't exist before. So May will be a cornerstone for Neuralectrics because, you know, we may have this new therapy. For the diagnostics, we already approved, both in America and in Europe. We have revenues. We sell in 75 countries. And for diagnostics, it's mainly about using our fast EEG in emergency rooms, in ICUs, maybe in remote villages, even in Africa, where they can put the cap and send the info to a neurologist, wherever they are, and diagnose whether a patient has epilepsy or encephalitis or maybe a stroke. And one of our dreams at Neuralectrics is that very, very small hospitals, our primary care centers, can use our technology, and patients don't need to be sent to these big hospitals, right? That you can monitor them in remote places and help them whatever they need.
Well, that remote element's interesting, and I want to get back to it. But there's something that I read that I thought was very kind of like a fun bit, and I want to ask you a bit more about it. Was your collaboration with NASA? Because I, you know, that's something that I think one wouldn't really expect that to have an application in that setting. So, you know, I was curious to hear more about how that came about, and maybe what was learned about the brain and brain stimulation through it.
I mean, we have NASA is one example, but because we are so active in neuroscience, a lot of researchers worldwide are using our technology just to learn more about the brain. What NASA wanted to do is just understand how fatigue in long-term, kind of long flights out of space would affect the human brain. And they were really monitoring, you know, astronauts or long flights to see the effects on the brain. But we have other very, very interesting research applications. We even have musicians trying to see the impact of music into their brains. For example, we had a collaboration with Peter Gabriel. We had a collaboration with artists like Patrick Amado doing how a digital art impacts your brain. So it's not only NASA, but it's a lot of, you know, in arts, in culture, in universities that are really seeing the impact that different activities have on the brain.
And then now to move on into the remote side, because I think that is interesting. You talked about scaling to the US, and I think this is a natural bridge to that conversation as well, is that you were granted during the pandemic, you're granted FDA approval for treating, for kind of having a home application to your technology. And I'm wondering, was that kind of an unexpected benefit of the pandemic, that it kind of like pushed that side of your technology forward, the remote at home personal application? And do you feel that it boosted adoption?
Well, I think it was, you know, I think that the pandemic changed, you know, and the way that you and I were speaking, that's also the outcome of the pandemic, right? We were not used to talk on Zoom, you know, before the pandemic. So same goes for health, right? Now people are more used to using telemedicine and remote telemedicine. So I think that, yes, it definitely boosted us, but I think that there's still a lot of work to do, because I still believe there are many, many underserved populations and groups of patients. You know, if you only think, not only in small, the U.S. is so big, and if you're in a small village in Wichita or in Utah or in Kansas or whatever, it's not the same that being in Boston where I lived on, or in San Francisco, right? So I think that there's still a lot of, we have to make sure that we have distributed healthcare. And the Mobile World Congress was last week in Barcelona. And you can see how all this kind of infrastructure of 5G and network connection allows for point of care of undistributed healthcare, right? So I think that in remote areas, rural areas, but also in countries like Africa and many continents, right, where not only, for example, the impact of epilepsy in Africa is bigger than in Europe because of malaria, meningitis, problems at birth, but they only have 0.3 neurologists for a million people, where in Europe you have like 50. So imagine, so many of these countries, they have more severe health problems and less special care. So telemedicine is even more important. But same happens in remote areas, right? When specialists are not available. So I think that this beauty of not only home, but remote, our small hospitals is really beautiful.
So you scaled to the U.S., to Boston, 2014. Are there then plans, because you mentioned Africa now a few times, are there plans to expand towards the African continent as well?
Well, we do sell in 75 countries, so we have strong operations. Of course, we have an office in Barcelona and in Boston. We have some people deploy in Beijing, in Asia. But yes, very recently, we have started to explore Africa. We already were selling in some African countries, but I think that it's a continent that it has a lot of severe health issues. So, you know, it would be good that we can also expand there.
Sure. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit into the differences and challenges of scaling in different locations, because you've got Spain, you've got Europe, and that has its own challenges that many are very vocal about. But what's the difference between when you started scaling the company over in the US, say, for example?
Well, I think that is beautiful. I really love that, you know, my investors are Boston-based. Part of my team is there. I really love the combination, right, of you know, having a European strong landmark, but also being able to be a global company. And I think the challenge is always managing your teams in Boston, right? And then I think that the challenge is that although patients with epilepsy or in the future depression that we want to treat or Alzheimer's, all the patients are very different, are the same, in the US or in Europe or in Asia or in Africa. The health systems, the regulatory path, the reimbursement, the market access are super different. So it's very challenging not only to manage your team, but also your strategy to get to the patient in these countries or the continents is super different. So it requires a big effort from the company side to really adapt to the different territories.
Okay. And how did this play into your involvement with EZTEC? Because I know that's something you're involved with in a large degree. There's Cabify, Glovo's also part of that platform. So where did that come about? Was this kind of to address these challenges that maybe Spanish companies have when they get larger?
Well, of course, I think that in Europe in general, it's not only about EZTEC. It's like we benefited a lot from a lot of European funding. I was on the board of the European Innovation Council for 4 years trying to advise the Commission on how to invest in startups. I think that one of the problems of Europe's or challenges, let's say, is that we are really good at creating companies, but it is more difficult for us to scale up companies. And I think part of the problem is the lack of funding compared to our other entrepreneurs in Asia or in the U.S., but it's also, you know, learning to share experiences and all these successful European players that have scale, right, can also be a reference for other Europeans scaling. And I think that's why I really wanted to lead EZTEC and gather all these amazing Spanish companies and make sure we have lessons learned to share on how to scale in different territories.
Okay, well, as some of our more eagle-eyed viewers might have noticed, we are now wearing different clothing, and it is indeed a different day. We apologize for the technical issues on our side. We left Anna hanging there as she answered a question, but we're back now, and I'm excited to get this interview finished.
Wonderful. This is like you have a break so that you can interiorize, you know, the interview, and then the next day you are like more comfortable to answer the question.
Yes. Well, it's good news that you came back then, because you had a think. You said, well, it's worth to finish at least.
So
I'm glad to see you back. So where we'd left it off was kind of we want to jump into your history with EZTEC, because I know that's an important part of what you do. There's other important companies, other important startups that have a lot to do with it. There's Cabify, there's Glovo. So I was hoping that maybe you could talk me through the work that EZTEC does and even how it views Spanish innovation and the way Spain is evolving in the wider ecosystem.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, so one of the things that I really struggle is the world is very diverse, and the tech companies are as well diverse. I think that the problem is that we only put the spotlight into very specific kind of tech companies, right? Like the Silicon Valley ones led by the Elon Musk, the Zuckerbergs, and the white men or the Steve Jobs, right? Mm. But I think that in general, in Europe and in the world, there are a lot of startups and companies that have very different profiles that are not the typical CEO. So leading a stake to me was also a way to show other kind of references, right? The fact that from Spain, you can have tech companies that are present in so many countries that are scaling super fast, right? Like Factorial, like Globo, like Cabify, like Job and Talent, like Redpoint, like Olalud. It's really important. And Filmin, right? Filmin is a kind of competitor of Netflix here from Spain, right? Which has very specific content. So why does it always have to be the gigantic, big company? You can also have amazing companies who are leaders in their niche. Neuralytics is a leader in our field, in the world. Filmin is a leader in this niche of curated, you know, content. Olalud is a, so I think that to me was very important to show because the talent we have in Spain and also the diversity in the companies we run and the CEOs we are.
I love Filmin. Yes, I have a subscription as well. It's always, whenever I think, you know, this, there's no way this movie is on streaming, it always is on Filmin, which is always.
But then, why do we talk so much about Netflix? Why in every tech company, whether you go in San Francisco or New York or a tech talk, there's always Netflix? I mean, just showcase other entrepreneurs, other companies that maybe are not as big, but to use it, their quality and their niche is amazing. So why are we so obsessed by size? You know, I don't know controversial, you know, skin, but why don't we start to be like more, you know, more specific, more selective, and understand that it's not all about scale. It's also about the companies that are doing a difference.
And then how do you then look at, because I know you've also done work in gender equality when it comes to STEM fields and tech. So is that kind of part of the work you do in S-Tech as well? As much as we're talking Spanish and European importance when it comes to companies, is there a gender angle to it as well?
Well, I have an anecdote that I love. I've been doing it a long time. You know, a few years ago in Spain, just as an example, Spain is a quite conservative country, not anymore, right? But we came from a dictatorship, which was Franco, right? That was in control of the army forces. You know, we are a Mediterranean country. So, you know, the role of men in our society, like in Italy, is very profound. We come from a Catholic culture, right? So there's a lot of, like, you know, heritage. And in Spain, a few years ago, the Minister of Defense was a woman, Carme Chacón. She unfortunately died very young, but Carme Chacón was pregnant with a huge belly as a Minister of Defense. And there is an epic video in which all these military men salute the Minister of Defense, and it was a pregnant woman walking in front of all the military men. I was like, oh my God. This is just awesome as a reference. So when somebody suggested, Anna, why don't you be the stick? I thought about Carme Chacón. I thought, wow, it's both controversial. I wasn't pregnant, right? But it's both controversial. First, because we are talking about Spain and technology. So the first controversy is there really technology in Spain? First controversy. And the second, let's put a woman to lead the stick, you know, as a statement of the diversity fact, right? So, you know, these things matter, and that's why, in a way, I also selected, you know, I really accepted and was honored to have that role, because then women and diversity can have these references, and you really help a lot of young girls by only, you know, saying, I'm the president of this association. So they say, wow, you're a woman and technology in Spain. So anyway, so I think that's why I think it's very active to be a reference. And I'm often in many media. And it doesn't matter what I say. Just the fact that they see, you know, all these women, me as a leader of a tech company, it's enough.
Yeah. Yeah, no, of course. The reference, as you're saying, is essential, really, to kind of moving forward, because you want to impact the next generation as much as the current ecosystem that we live in. So,
and one comment is that in Women's Day, which was Sunday, I often also talk about not only women, because I'm a privileged woman from Barcelona. Why? I come from a beautiful city. I come from a very well-known country. And when I competed in Boston, it was hard. But imagine if I was a person of color, had a veil because of my religion, came from a very underserved country or village in the middle of Africa, right? So, you know, I think that we have to think not only on women, but on diversity. I would also want to see, you know, leaders with different sexual orientation, that they clearly talk about it. So it's not only women. Is sexual orientation, race, geography, you know, there's so many things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just with, we're 2 days after International Women's Day, and all different kinds of publications have been, you know, talking about, we ran a 100 top women in startups in Europe, you know, and other publications have done the same. But yeah, I found that the most interesting insights have always been the ones that say, well, even if when we're running this, there's still so much more to go. Even if we're talking coverage wise, we haven't run the numbers, but I've seen other publications run the numbers of how many men are covered versus women. And that's not even taking diversity into account. And the majority still is with men.
Yeah, yeah. And not only that, I mean, a lot of people talk about how good is the book Bad Blood and the, you know, the documentary on Bad Blood. And I agree. But I also think, wow, for once that we had an entrepreneur, Elizabeth Holmes, you know, as a reference, which of course she did things wrong. I would really like to know how many men have behaved as Elizabeth Holmes, and how many books and series have you seen on that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there is a bias that I think that the book is great and everything, but come on, I mean, you know, this happens, you know, to men and other people as well, right? And I don't see so much media attention when it happens to a man, or not so much coverage, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So I hope we can bring the successful women that didn't behave like Elizabeth Holmes, why aren't being spoken about and having, you know, I think there is one on Netflix, a series about a woman that has a dating app. I think that's a good one. I haven't seen it. But more like...
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, bring out these successful women and don't wait until they fail to make them famous. Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. And there's no lack of them. You know, as I say, we ran the top 100 women in startups, and we had, I think, over 1,000, 1,500 entries of people, but not people nominating themselves, but people nominating other women that they knew. And it's just, there's too many. We run it every year. And I'd say, you know, every year we get 80% of new names. Yeah. Yeah. So there's no lack of it. I guess that's part of what you're doing. That's part of what we're all trying to do, trying to slowly change that. So I think for the final bit here, and then I don't think we're going to do a part three. I think this will be the final bit of the interview. I kind of want to hear your idea, because part of what I do in preparation for these interviews is I look at the our coverage in the ecosystem, right? So not just only what New Electrics is doing, but what other startups are doing and what kind of funding they're seeing around. And from what I looked at, and this is a general look, over the past year, we saw over $150 million in funding go to new companies that are kind of involved in neurotech. But, you know, not much of that has come from Spain, really. You Still Stand is really one of the most important, of course, but even just numbers-wise, one of the few that do it. So how do you see the funding environment working for neurotech companies in Europe right now?
Well, I think it's much better than it used to be. I mean, and there are many rounds happening. In Europe, we had a risk. I mean, Carolina Aguilar from InBrain has very substantial money. I mean, it's not as much as in the US because we have less neurotech companies. Right. But Carola InBrain is a good example. I also raised money. So I believe neurotech is getting much better. But don't forget, always the U.S. leads the investment. The U.S. in proportion invests 4 times what Europe invests in VC. But it's true that in Europe, things are improving. I mean, there are more and more bigger funds of more than 100 and plus billion and million. And now, for example, there's the creation of this big scale-up fund at European level, which is supposed to have tickets of 100 million and more. So I think that there are a lot of public-private initiatives to really stimulate the private market to do big rounds. And that's something that the U.S. doesn't have. So I know we always have less money for Skylab, but here you have the possibility of governments to match the private sector to really allow for these mega rounds. A colleague of mine, Javier Santizo, just raised in Madrid a fund of $750 million. I mean, you start to see these big funds in Europe that... You know, Atomic, of course, is huge, but I think we're going to see more and more and more. And I think that, you know, I'm not so obsessed. When I started in Boston and I moved my company there, and, you know, oftentimes the Bob Langers and the professors of MIT and the people in the biotech industry told us that 30 years ago, Cambridge, where MIT is, was like a really dangerous place. Like, you know, there was nothing there, there was crime, blah, blah, blah. And it was through the starting of the biotech industry only 30 years ago that that area bloomed to become one of the top world places for life sciences. So, you know, it's true that MIT and Harvard and the hospitals have a long tradition, but I think that Europe is coming later and the ecosystem is less mature and we have less money. But we have to do it the European way, and we just have to, you know, get up to pace and persevere and be constant and be aggressive. But, you know, ecosystems grow at different paces. And, you know, history is long and the world is big. And, you know, I think it's exciting. It's, you know, we should really be positive and just create our own rules.
Yeah. I mean, especially as kind of these calls for European autonomy seem to be getting more and more popular, and the wish to retain talent and retain companies, you know, because not so many companies did what you did, where you expanded to the US, but you maintained a European headquarters. Some just make the full jump and say, bye bye Europe, we're in America now.
And at the end, you know, I own now an American company. I'm very proud to own an American company. And I really love the States. And I really love, you know, having U.S. investors. And I really love. But I don't consider myself a U.S. or a Spanish, European. I'm a global company. I'm a global company. Think about Medtronic, General Electric. They're global players, right? So at the end, it's really about having an impact all over the world and taking the best of each territory. And Europe is wonderful for some things. And there are things that the U.S. is better. And in Asia, and in Africa, there will be other advantages. But we entrepreneurs, we need to think globally and be global leaders and play the game in every territory. Because to me, Anna Maikis, and to my team, I didn't work like crazy for the last 20 years to help Catalan patients or to help Spanish patients or to help European patients. If I have a cure for epilepsy or a treatment for depression, why should I only help patients in my neighborhood? We want to help everyone. Whether you're capable or not is another story. But we have a global mindset. And then we will be in the territories where we have to be and where it allows us to have our vision executed according to our values and to our things, right? So... But it's really global. It's not about Europe or the U.S. And this is changing, which I'm very worried because I always have the freedom to move and to have this company. I have persons deploying the gene, remember? So, you know, if sovereign controls, you know, I may have to choose, right, at some point. And it will be totally a company decision, right? And, of course, an entrepreneur decision. Or if they make me choose, I have to choose. but I wish I wouldn't have to choose and have a yoga company.
Okay. Well, on that note, I'm going to let you get back to your busy day. I know you've got a trip to the U.S. coming up, speaking of. So yes. I hope that goes very well for you. And I want to thank you again for coming back on twice now and for your flexibility on this great interview. Thank you.
Thanks to you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Anna.